Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, www.mecu.com, or you can go to steinershow.org and click on their banner. There was an article, an interesting piece that was written by Jane Mayer in the last New Yorker magazine called Secret Share. It's the story of a former government employee named Thomas Drake, who is scheduled to appear in court here in Baltimore on June 13th to be charged under the Espionage Act because there was an article written by Shuvon Gorman of the Baltimore Sun, then of the Baltimore Sun, talking about financial waste, bureaucratic dysfunction, and questionable legal practices by the National Security Agency. So the question is, this was done under the Bush administration, and many people thought that when Barack Obama became president of the United States of America that that this case may not be followed up with, that it might be dropped, because we talked a great deal during that campaign about transparency in government. So it raises a lot of issues about this case, about what the NSA is really doing. Are they spying on American citizens? Is that true or not? And the fact that there are more people now, five, perhaps now six coming up, people who are being indicted under President Barack Obama's administration for espionage. This, some people say this is going beyond even where President Nixon went. But the larger issue is here is what is going on. Some people are arguing that this is perhaps an issue that there is a growing corporate intelligence complex network in America that could stifle our democracy and freedom. Is that saying too much? We don't know. Now, we did ask folks from all over the spectrum to join this conversation today. Most of those who think that this prosecution is right could not attend today. We'll continue this discussion over the coming weeks and months. So all sides will be here. But right now we are joined by Jesselyn Raddick, who is Homeland Security and Human Rights Director of the Government Accountability Project, and Mark Feldstein, Associate Professor of Media and Public Affairs at the George Washington University School of Media, Public Affairs, who was mentioned in the article. And Jesselyn Raddick and Mark Feldstein, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Great to be on.
Appreciate you taking the time. So this article really struck me. I mean, I only knew about this case peripherally. I hadn't really spent a lot of time looking at it, and it made me open up a lot more in terms of the articles I read after this. But who'd like to step back and to start with Mark and talk a bit about this case and what this – why you, as you were quoting the article, were so worried about what this does to – the attack on human rights in America?
Well, I think what we're really seeing here is a perversion of the Espionage Act to classify as espionage, as spying, what are really the kinds of healthy exchanges of information and that a democracy depends upon. Information is vital to the citizenry being able to make informed choices about politicians and politics and policy. And in the Drake case, what we were seeing was a whistleblower coming forward with evidence of waste and malfeasance, precisely the kind of information that ought to be rewarded for being made public, and instead having the book thrown at him in the most draconian way. And that affects all of us because all of us in a democracy depend on honest whistleblowers being able to perform an internal check on wrongdoing so that our taxpayer dollars aren't wasted. And it's very disturbing to see the government do this.
And just Raddick, this is a case, this particular case is what we're talking about at the moment that will broaden it out. Thomas Drake, who worked for the National Security Agency, was a case where he gave information to this reporter, Shuvon Gorman. But it was about fraud and abuse in terms of the misuse of money and maybe wiretapping and looking at domestic citizens of the United States of America as opposed to foreign citizens, which is the purview of the NSA. So talk a bit about that and what really went on here.
He actually only went to Shuvon Gorman after going through numerous proper internal channels, including the NSA, his bosses at the NSA, the NSA General Counsel, the Department of Defense Inspector General, which, by the way, substantiated his claim, and to the House and Senate Intelligence Committees, which didn't do much, And he went to Siobhan Gorman with unclassified information only, which is his right to do as a citizen. Now, NSA may have certain administrative regulations on that. He knew perhaps he could be fired, but he never expected to be threatened with going to jail for the next 35 years.
So then what is going on? So let's talk a bit about what we think is going on here. I mean, this is clearly, in the article, in the interview, he said he thought I might be fired. He said that. That probably will happen, but I think this is worth it because we have to look at this abuse and fraud, and we can't let it go on. They may, in fact, be wiretapping, misusing this one, misusing things the agency, and maybe looking at domestic citizens of the United States through this thin thread program that was kind of turned around and used in a different way than the person who created it meant for it to be used. So, why is he being prosecuted? Do you think?
I think, the easy answer is that President Obama doesn't like leaks and has a particular disdain for them. But I think the more complicated answer is that this is a backdoor way of creating an official Secrets Act through the judicial branch rather than through the legislative branch, meaning Congress. And this is completely inappropriate and not the way to do it. We don't have an official Secrets Act in this country for a reason. It's, as Mark said, it's antithetical to a democracy. But that seems to be what they're trying to do, not only in Drake's case, but the other so-called leak prosecutions, which more often than not involve whistleblowers.
But there is a bill in Congress, if I remember correctly, and I'm going to put a call into Senator Ben Cardin's office to have him come on the show to talk about it, Mark Feldstein, that would do just what Justin is saying, which is to create a law that does cover this, that is not getting much play in the press that I've seen.
Well, certainly a law like that would be helpful, but a law like that isn't needed to keep the Obama administration from misusing the Espionage Act. They certainly have the choice to not bring these charges, and they chose not to. So it's all well and good to talk about Congress passing this legislation, and that would be a positive step. But if an administration is determined to pervert the intent of these laws, there's really nothing to stop it, unfortunately, or very little at the moment seems to be to stop it. Maybe if they overreach and are overturned in the courts, that will be a slap back. Jocelyn, am I pronouncing that right, or Jesselyn?
Jesselyn.
Jesselyn is being modest here, though, because I've never met her, but I teach my students about her. She was her case was a famous case when she was in the Bush administration in the Justice Department, when she herself was a whistleblower, and they went after her, not with the Espionage Act, but on other charges. And I remember at the time, a lot of us felt, okay, well, this was the Bush administration overreaching. And in fact, they used the Espionage Act in a case I was involved with as well that was overreaching. And so we thought, okay, this would be different with Obama. Obama campaigned on transparency. He was going to change the way the rules are played. And in fact, as you mentioned, what's disturbing is far from changing the rules, we've seen actually an escalation of a crackdown that suggests this isn't just a matter of party or ideology, but seems to be a kind of encroachment by the executive branch that's increasing over time.
On our way to opening the phones here, 410-319-8888, and several people calling in now. We'll get to your calls. Justin, if you could just talk a bit about, A, for our listeners, what happened to you, and B, how things have changed in America in this regard in the last 10 or 20 years?
In my situation, I was the Justice Department ethics attorney in the case of the so-called American Taliban, John Walker Lind, who advised them not to interrogate him without a lawyer and certainly not to torture him. I ended up getting pushed out of the Justice Department and later found out there was an order from my emails, which had magically disappeared, which I was able to reconstruct and gave to the press, which resulted in a brutal leak investigation that included, getting referred to the D.C. bar, where I'm licensed, and the Maryland bar, getting put on the no-fly list and a lot of other unsavory acts. However, what I went through is vanilla cake compared to what Drake is going through right now. Bush harassed whistleblowers unmercifully and made their lives miserable, but he didn't try to put them in jail.
Well, let me open the phones here and have our listeners joining, because I really want to raise some issues here about where this may be going and what we have to look out for here in America when it comes to the kind of marriage in some ways, at least what appears to be the marriage in some ways, of our intelligence community and the new corporate intelligence community that has so many contracts with the government, and what the danger is. And maybe this is part of what Drake was hitting, which is why he was gone after so deeply. I'll raise those in a minute. 410-319-8888 is the number here. We're talking about the show is inspired by the article by Jane Mayer, who wrote Secret Share in the issue of The New Yorker. Jesslyn Raddick, who's Homeland Security and Human Rights Director of the Government Accountability Project, and Mark Feldstein, Associate Professor of Media and Public Affairs at the Georgetown University School of Media and Public Affairs, is with us. 410-319-8888. Bobby, you're on the air. Bobby, you're on the air. Bobby, can you hear us?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, just turn the radio down. We can hear you.
Can you hear me now?
We got you. Go ahead.
Okay, great. I'll say that. I just want to make a few quick points there, Mark, and Jess. First of all, I really want to basically say is that I totally disagree with Mr. President Barack Obama's doing. I'd heard about what he's doing as far as being more harsh, as far as taking on some of Bush's policies, this being one of them, as far as adopting an even more stringent, stance on a lot of his issues. But I don't think people really should be all that surprised about what's going on, although we should be very, very, very afraid. If you go back to what President Eisenhower has said, basically, beware the military-industrial complex. Well, today, the mantra should be, beware of the corporate global, overlords, because that's what's going on, because corporations are literally running policy via their lobbies. Oh, am I still on?
Yeah, we're listening to you. Go ahead.
And another thing I want to basically say, too, to follow up, is that, we might be in the year 2011, but I'm telling you right now, we're going towards 1984 in a big way, because Big Brother isn't only here. But it's Big Brother's being exploited heavily by a corporation, because what's happening now is that whenever a corporate entity wants to thin out its roles and pretty much cut the fat, so to speak, what do? They utilize things like Facebook and Twitter, and they troll through those types of websites looking for any type of incriminating remarks or anything they can find about potential employees or current employees, and they get rid of them right away based on some comment sometimes made by an associate of that person. So my point, though, is that corporations are definitely, all they're doing is strengthening their already tense stranglehold on our government, because we see every day how the lobbyists affect public policy and how even our so-called Supreme Court, which should be unbiased, they've ruled in favor of basically making campaign dollars unlimited and basically counting a corporate entity as being one, when we all know corporate entities have uku gobs of money and almost an unlimited financial resources. So we shouldn't be surprised by what's going on. Again, Eisenhower said it years ago, beware the military-industrial complex, but now we've also got to beware of the so-called prison-industrial complex, the corporate entities, and every other industrial complex that try to edify, because that's what's happening now.
Bobby, you've laid a lot on the table, some of which I want to bring up after this break to respond to that and to talk about what Thomas Drake may be at the tip of the iceberg of, which may be one of the reasons he's being why the case is so intense against him. We'll come right back with Jesslyn Raddick and Mark Feldstein. We have to take a very brief break here come up with our traffic and news at the top of the hour and come back to this conversation with our guests. So please stay with us. You can join us at 410-319-8888. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. As I said earlier, this conversation was inspired by Judith Mayer's piece in the New Yorker magazine called Secret Share. Is Thomas Drake an enemy of the state? We are joined by Mark Feldstein, Associate Professor of Media and Public Affairs at the George Washington University School of Media and Public Affairs, and Jesselyn Raddick, Homeland Security and Human Rights Director of the Government Accountability Project. Number here is 410-319-8888. The caller we had, and what I was thinking about, folks, was that, you know, when Thomas Drake talked about what he knew, and according to the article that Jane Mayer wrote, we were talking about this one program that they used, Thin Thread, that was not used, even though it was kind of seemed, at least from what I've read, to be foolproof, and it was working and protected people's rights in America to kind of figure out what happened after 9/11. But then that was to protect this country. But then that was dropped for the other programs that were actually coming out of a company that at that time was Booz Allen, that made a lot of money on the NSA, and it's a former official of that agency who was a former head of the NSA was now working for that company, and then he later became director of intelligence under George Bush. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but there's all these things that kind of fit together that say maybe that's one of the reasons this is going on, is the change in our intelligence world that has become a world where half the money paid for intelligence by federal money, Jesselyn Raddick, is paid to private corporations.
Well, I think that was certainly part of what Drake was complaining about, the sweetheart deals and the revolving door in which people who worked for SAIC ended up making up the upper echelon of NSA management, and the fact that the components for Trailblazer were largely farmed out to contracts, these two particular firms that were winning all the contracts and money. That was certainly a theme that was going on and a thread that ran throughout his complaints.
And Mark Feldstein, how much is this a play on what happens in the future? I mean, when I was researching the articles behind this article, that just talked about the revolving door between the corporate intelligence community where the contracts are and the NSA and the CIA, it's pretty startling.
Well, yes, it is. And I'm sorry to say it doesn't extend just to private industry. It also extends to my business, the media business, where you have all of these former military and CIA folks, doing revolving doors as consultants to the networks. And as the New York Times revealed, often they're simultaneously on the payroll of the Pentagon as various contractors. So they're sort of paid propagandists for the government while being identified as independents. So that, sort of contaminates the public discourse where the public doesn't even know and is getting very slanted information about what's going on.
So how do you draw the line? How do we draw the line between protecting what is a state interest in terms of our state security and the leaks that have come out, whether it's Thomas Drake's, whether arguing which put soldiers at risk, some on the other side of this argument would argue, whether it's the stuff going on now with other people like CIA official Jeffrey Sterling for allegedly leaking this information to New York Times reporter James Risen.
It's a great question, and it's one that goes back more than 200 years since the beginning of the Republic. There has always been a tension between liberty and order, and they go back to the framers of our Constitution when Jefferson was more concerned about liberty and John Adams was more concerned about order. And Adams signed the Alien and Sedition Acts, which jailed people for criticizing the government, and Jefferson let that expire. And what you see in 200 years of this kind of tension is that in virtually all these cases, I mean, there are some legitimate secrets that almost everybody would agree upon. There's consensus about information in advance about when troops will be marching or when ships will be sailing, that kind of real-time intelligence given to an enemy in wartime obviously poses a genuine threat to the national security. But those kinds of instances are extremely rare, and rarer still are the times when any journalist has ever made that kind of information public. Instead, what we have seen over the course of 200 years is that national security is invoked by governments that are trying to protect themselves from what's really political embarrassment. And they use as a smokescreen, as a cover, this argument of national security when it's in their interest, and they completely violate it and leak all kinds of stuff, true or false, classified or not, when they find it in their political interest. So it's really been political football used by administrations of both parties to maintain power, to maintain control.
And Jesslyn, is it? Then we're going to go to Webster, our next caller up in Hanover. So Webster, hold on. Just want to ask Jesslyn this one question. Will come to you. So that when some people, especially on the progressive side of the spectrum, make the argument that five people are now indicted, that there are in this country around these kinds of issues more than in any other presidency, worse than Richard Nixon. Is that true, or are we making much ado about nothing? I mean, they're making a mountain out of a molehill here.
No, it's true. I mean, I think it's pretty significant. I mean, the Espionage Act, first of all, is meant to go after spies, not whistleblowers. And it seems pretty telling that there had only been three cases under the Espionage Act for allegedly mishandling classified information before the Drake indictment. And then in less than six months period, you get five more people indicted under that. So I think it's a very real problem. And I do think it speaks to this greater clampdown on information that, I mean, there's a freedom of the press, First Amendment, freedom of the press. People have a right to go to the press. It ends up adding insult to injury that this administration is willing to, quote, look forwards, not backwards, at war crimes and torture and warrantless wiretapping, but is willing to go after whistleblowers. Barack Obama was elected on the back of whistleblowers who brought forth a lot of that exact wrongdoing that he campaigned against. So I do think this is a very real issue, particularly for the men who are currently facing, spending the rest of their lives in jail. It's a huge issue. Plus, I don't think people understand that this could set horrible precedent that would enable the government to go after journalists in the same manner.
No, hold that thought, because I'm going to get Webster on the phone here. I promise to go right to him. I want to talk about how it would possibly affect journalists and what these stories told us and what they didn't. 410-319-8888. Webster, you're on the air.
Hey, good evening, guy. I like your program.
Thank you.
Hey, you wanted to stop this government contracts and stuff? Take the money out of it. If you take the money out of it and stop making government contracts lucrative, it'll probably all disappear.
That's probably true.
One approach, I suppose.
Mark?
If I get back to the journalistic aspect of this, Mark, that you were referring to, I mean, obviously an attack on whistleblowers who leak to journalists is an attack on journalists. And so the next step on the slippery slope would be potentially the prosecution of journalists. I wouldn't go so far, by the way, as to say this is worse than Richard Nixon. I just wrote a book on Richard Nixon and a reporter named Jack Anderson, and Nixon's White House actually plotted to assassinate him, as well as prosecute him under the Espionage Act, and conducted gay-bashing smears that were false, and so on and so forth. So Richard Nixon still is in the class on his own, even if he didn't prosecute the whistleblowers to the same extent, although he certainly did go after Daniel Ellsberg, and only because of his own misconduct is Ellsberg out of prison now rather than behind bars. Be that as it may about Nixon, what matters isn't really so much just the whistleblower by themselves or the journalists by themselves. They matter because they matter to the public, and that's who's really being threatened by these kinds of prosecutions, not just the whistleblower, not just the reporter, but the public at large, their ability to have a government that is held accountable, that is kept honest, depends on journalists, depends on whistleblowers. And when you start criminalizing this kind of patriotic, democratic behavior, you really start down the road to, you know, Soviet-style tactics, and that's what's really troubling. You diminish the accountability that a democracy requires to keep those in power from abusing that power.
And I agree, especially in the wake of 9/11, when some of the branches of government were essentially not functioning the way they were supposed to. The judicial branch was kind of rubber stamping a lot of the war on terror cases that came before it. And Congress was, you know, passing the Patriot Act without reading it. At that point, you really need whistleblowers to act as an external check, and you need journalists to serve as the proverbial fourth estate to serve as a check on these abuses of power. It's no big secret that in times of national security crises, civil liberties tend to be threatened. But you know, the safety valve for that is a free and open press and the ability for them to write about it. And if the sources go away, they're not going to have as many articles to write. And so it's, you know, again, also a way to circumvent going after the press directly. You just go after their sources so people clam up and don't even feel safe going to the media, even though that's their right, any citizen's right under the First Amendment.
Well, let's take a look at these, the five cases we're talking about here, and we'll see what precedent they set and what dangers you see in them, or were these people or are these people being properly prosecuted, or were they? I mean, we have the cases that names people may not know because it didn't really hit the news that much. We know that Thomas Drake is going to be tried here in Baltimore, and what he allegedly, the stories we're talking about, from so far as I can see, had to do with wasting taxpayer money, the use of ineffective technologies, and perhaps even understand that citizens of the United States were being listened to by the NSA. The power of the NSA we'll get to in a minute. But then there was also FBI linguist Shimei Leibowitz, who is in prison now for, they said, leaking in undisclosed information to an undisclosed blogger. And they won't reveal what it was that he did or didn't do. State Department analyst David Kim being prosecuted because he allegedly gave secret information about North Korea to a reporter. You have CIA official Jeffrey Sterling, who allegedly gave leaked information to James Risen. Is it Risen or Risen? I'm not sure. New York Times reporter. And then, of course, we have Bradley Manning with WikiLeaks and Mr. Drake. So, I mean, you know, you look at these, some people might say, well, look, some of these things make sense to me, or do they not?
Well, it's very hard to know because, you know, the only partial information has come out so far, and largely what's been leaked has been, you know, the kind of Chicken Little government, you know, the sky is falling down side that's pushed by the government. You know, so I presume we will find out more as these cases go forward. I have not heard anything yet that sounded anything comparable to troops, you know, positions in wartime or sailing ships, you know, schedules or anything that's, you know, a clear and unambiguous, immediate, irreparable threat to national security.
Right. People are not divulging sources and methods. They seem to be going after low to mid-level bureaucrats in a number of these cases for divulging information that embarrassed the United States. And I think if you, in contrast, look at Bob Woodward's book, which is rife with top-level secrecy information of the highest order of magnitude, and no one's prosecuting him. And, you know, these guys are relatively, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, a lot of their leaks are, you know, of lower-level information for a number of them. You know, even Gabe Schoenfeld, who's advocated these kinds of prosecutions, has said, yeah, that I didn't mean for it to be going after this kind of these kinds of people. The government is trying to, you know, send a message and set an example. And that may be true, but then that's about politics and has nothing to do with justice. So let's not dress it up as some form of justice when it's not.
One of the things that was kind of frightening to me to think about with this was that what Mr. Drake was supposed to have done or may have done In the context of what the NSA has, in the article, as it quotes in the article, that the agency has a capacity to intercept and download every 6 hours electronic communications equivalent to the contents of the Library of Congress, 3 times the size of the CIA, 1/3 of the United States' entire intelligence budget, and it goes on and on and on. But that the gentleman who created this SIDTED program, Mr. Binney, whose house was also searched and his home was raided, believed that ThinThread had been ready to deploy 9 months earlier. That he thinks that the bits of conversation that were missed about 9/11 could have been found. Instead of investigating these kinds of things, we are putting Mr. Drake in jail perhaps for 32 years.
Fred, I think they're projecting the sins of the NSA onto people like Mr. Drake. I mean, if Mr. Drake is being indicted and prosecuted for being under the Espionage Act, then it begs the question on who was he spying, and that would be NSA, and on whose behalf he was spying, and that would be the American people. I think Drake and Binney and Wiebe, who are all mentioned in the article and who are all clients of mine, were astounded at what they saw going on. And these are not a bunch of flaming liberals.
No, they were pretty conservative men.
Yeah, these are Republican men who have worked their whole lives in the military or government service, who are saying, what are we doing here? So I think there's definitely the concern about kind of going on the dark side, so to speak.
I'm sorry.
The way that we did with torture.
So when people leak information to the press, what should be the response of the United States government or of a business if they're in fact giving out information that is deemed classified, that they're saying these were the cases, even though they may not have put anyone in danger? What should be happening instead?
They ought to be looking at the substance of what's being leaked and whether or not there's something to them for concern. So they should be looking at, did we screw up? Did we waste money? Did we create a system that allowed 9/11 to happen that could have been prevented? That's the first thing you do. The second thing you do is if such is classified, you ask, is your classification system working? Are you overclassifying so much information that even trivial stuff is technically classified? And that's clearly the case. There's almost unanimous agreement on that, again, on all sides of the political spectrum, that this government, inordinately overclassifies information. And only when there is a genuine harm to national security of the kind that has not been demonstrated to date, only then do you start to look at punishing people for that. So they've, immediately gone into, what's really kind of cover-up mode rather than looking at the substance of it. It's unfortunately a predictable response by bureaucracies to information classified or not that comes out and embarrasses them. But it's the wrong approach.
And you were going to say, Jesselyn?
In all these cases, the government has not asserted that any of these alleged disclosures or retaining of information harmed the United States or benefited a foreign nation. And certainly the nature of what was disclosed was not in the category of sources and methods and the kind of stuff that should be kept secret, like troop movements and nuclear plans and that sort of thing. I think a lot of stuff also is not properly classified or it's overclassified. It's kind of it speaks for itself when the government, does a motion in the Drake case to ban the mention of the word whistleblower or prosecution or newspaper articles. I mean, that is Orwellian, to reference back to your last caller.
It does. And so the question is, I guess in the last couple minutes we have, do the two of you think that we are on, not to be dramatic about it, but are on this an Orwellian slide? Is this that dangerous from your perspective?
I think it is. I think it's cause for alarm. I don't think people have been worried enough. I think this, you know, the Drake case should be focused on the way people did the Pentagon Papers case.
Hmm.
Same with, you know, what's going on in the Manning case. I think people should be paying attention. And part of the reason the government likes the Drake case is they don't have to go after a reporter. So they're, you know, some of the interest from some natural allies, perhaps, is diminished because they don't have to worry this time. But I really think a lot more people should be paying attention, because if it were not for the Government Accountability Project speaking publicly about this issue, I don't think many people would know about this prosecution. I think it would be largely flying under the radar screen, which is exactly what the government wanted.
Which the others have been doing, except for Bradley Manning.
Right.
Well, that's right, and that's a particularly gruesome case because of the horrific conditions under which he had been held for so long. And I you know, applaud what Jesselyn and the Government Accountability Project are doing on this, and Mark, I applaud you for giving it attention. And it's been sadly missing in the national press, which ought to be outraged because it's an attack on not just the whistleblowers, but their profession as well, and really on the citizenry at large.
We will look forward to having both of you back, and we are going to ask people who think this is not this is the correct move to come on. We should come back when that happens as well. We're going to continue to cover all of these, and on our website, steinershow.org, to link to the work of both Mark Felsine and Jesselyn Radix. You can see what they're talking about, as well as the New Yorker article. This is something we have to be aware of, stay on top of it. It's our democracy. It's our future beyond us and our children's as well. So Jesselyn Radix, Homeland Security and Human Rights Director of the Government Accountability Project, and Mark Felsine, Associate Professor of Media and Public Affairs at the George Washington University School of Media and Public Affairs. Thank you both so much for taking time, this much time, with our listeners today.
Thank you for having me.
Enjoyed it.
Thank you very much. Take care. Talk soon. Folks, we're going to take a brief break. We come back. My dear friend, the wonderful poet Ethelbert Miller, who was a dear friend of Gil Scott Heron's, will join us as we listen to the music and talk about the legacy and life of Gil Scott Heron, who we lost over the weekend much too soon. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. We'll be right back, so please stay with us.